Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Good morning, one and all, to a Friday edition of The Damage Report. Me, Johnny Arola, and despite the fact that he's currently on vacation, Brett Ehrlich coming to us live from Mary Poppins.
Hi, this is a straw hat. I don't think it's like the actual kind of hat one wears on vacation.
If you're and strolling through the English countryside or riding a bizarre old school bicycle, I think you could.
This Surrey doesn't have a fridge on top.
I just watched When Harry Met Sally. Everything's coming up me. Look, Brett, thank you for being here despite being on your vacation. You are doing like the exact same thing that you and Anna say that I do. Why are you doing that? You don't have to be doing this.
You're working while you're away?
Yeah, you could have gotten.
Oh. I responded to an analytics email while I was on vacation.
It's fun.
But I mean, you know what?
Vacation anyway.
I have my vacation iPad. I don't know if you guys have one of these, a vacation iPad. Well, it's a vacation iPad cover. You put it on and then you treat yourself not like the person who's on vacation, but the kids of the people who are on vacation, where they give them an iPad and go like, have your iPad time because mommy and daddy are drinking. And then you just sit there. In isolation, watching Dora or whatever kids watch these
despite
days.
Despite being at a delightful place.
The Thunderbirds. I'm really
excited. You're in Hawaii watching Moana on your iPad.
I've watched Moana so many times, John.
I really like him. I didn't know that we'd be talking about Moana, but I think Moana's one of the best Disney movies. And Stitch is up there too. Basically, just be in Hawaii.
It's a twofer. You get to be feeling like a kid and in a tropical paradise, despite a few reedy lines from The Rock. But
how? What?
He's not that good. He's not that good an actor.
We're gonna move on, but I have a new garbage Vin Diesel here.
And The Rock, but
that's what's so weird about it. Anyway, we got news to talk about, and I was going to say I intended to say this before the show, but we gotta proceed expeditiously. So we got a lot to get to, and I want to get to all of it. So we're gonna get to all of it. So everybody needs to shut up in the audience, but mostly me and you. Anyway, okay, so we're gonna cover a lot in this next 90 minutes, or we're gonna try at least. We'll probably talk more about Vin Diesel, The Rock, what's up with that feud on set, can they get past it? Will they ever do a scene together again? And while we're doing all of that, you can hit the like button, you can share the stream, let people know what's going on. Oh, also, we were doing our pre-show on the YouTube channel. Usually we start around 9:15, 9:20. And I realized I never really promote it on the show, so I don't even know if you're watching this in the members thing, or if you're watching on Twitch, if you even know that this exists. So it does about 40, 45 minutes before the show every day on YouTube. We do a little live video, talk about some of the news. So coming out, it's fun. And Brett, with that, you ready to talk about some news?
I couldn't be more excited. And you know what? I just want to say I'm so happy to be here. So happy, in fact, that I delayed the pedicure I'm getting later. I'm getting a pedicure at 1 p.m.
Are you actually?
Today. Never done it. Been walking around without my shoes on. The feet. I have passed a threshold, and now there's a household government mandated pedicure that's about to happen later today. I couldn't be more excited.
I've
always wanted to sit on one of those chairs, like high chairs for people.
I kind of feel that way, but for shoe shines, and I've once gotten my shoes shined before a meeting, and I left feeling incredibly guilty. So the most shocking thing about what you just told me is that you've never had it done before. I would have guessed that you definitely would have had it done.
No, I like to take care of myself, but I've never done this.
Okay. Well, be sure to post pics on Instagram before and after. Anyway, we're gonna talk about some news. It's tragic news, but that's the news that's presented. You go to war with the army you've got, not the news that you want. Okay, so let's talk about this. Incredible tragedy. I'm sure most people watching this are familiar with this, but actor Alec Baldwin on the set of a Western movie currently filming called Rust Cockton fired what was supposed to be a prop gun and hit and eventually killed the film's cinematographer, hit the director as well. So Halina Hutchins, 42-year-old, was airlifted directly from the set of the movie Rust to the University of New Mexico Hospital in Albuquerque and died from her injuries as a result of being hit by that shot. Baldwin also hit the film's director, Joel Souza. One of the film's stars, Francis Fisher, said Souza was released from the hospital early Friday morning. One of the through lines in this story is that there's not a lot of incredibly detailed information. So it is not clear whether it was only one shot or more than one. I am assuming it had to be one shot. So presumably, you know, that is what happened. In any event, we're going to talk about a few different implications of this, but I want to start off by talking about the individual who tragically died in this horrific accident. Ms. Hutchins was from Ukraine, grew up on a Soviet military base in the Arctic Circle. She studied journalism in Kiev and film in LA, was named a rising star by the American Cinematographer magazine back in 2019. And you can see some shots of her. Everybody that worked with her seemed to have great things to say about her and her potential in the field. She described herself as an adventurer and a risk taker, and you know her biography seems to bear that out. Coming to a very different place to pursue the work that she wanted to do. And this, when this story broke, like people were tweeting about it. I didn't believe that it was true. It sounded fake. And by the way, some components of the story have not been borne out, and we'll talk about that as well. But Brett, did you like live find out about this as it was initially breaking?
I found out about this through notification that came to my phone from the New York Times. And it is, I mean, you hear about this. This is happening. People have died on set as a result of handling, like when you say what's supposed to be a prop gun. It depends on how they're coordinating the stunt or like the use of the prop, right? So you can have like a gun that is plastic and doesn't shoot anything, or you can have a gun that shoots blanks, or you can have various guns that look realistic or not. You can have a blank in the chamber and shoot it, and there is gas that comes out. There's all kind, there's gunpowder in that. There's not supposed to be a projectile, but like, the rule on set, I mean, there's so many protocols that go into having a realistic prop on set of like a union production that get followed. And I've worked with prop masters who go from being the most laid back people to the most folk. I mean, most of the professionals are like this. Like, they're like, all right, this is the protocol that we go through. Like, we are going to check to see if there's a bullet in the magazine, if there's a bullet in the chamber. People have died on set, like doing, like pretending to like shoot themselves in the head with what they think is a prop, but the prop master hasn't had a chance to explain to them, like, we have to check to see what's in this gun, if there's a bullet or not. So when you hear that someone was killed on set with a prop gun, if you're outside of that, you're like, how the hell could it happen? But if you have worked on productions before, you're like, there are like 6 or 7 different ways this could happen. And it depends on if Alec Baldwin, who's probably handled, he's been in so many movies, in so many plays, and handled so many props. It just reeks of terrible, terrible mistake.
Mistake for multiple people to reach that. And you described some of the ways these prop, like they literally can just be a piece of rubber that looks like a gun. They can be guns designed to shoot non-bullet projectiles for the purposes of this. They can be active firearms firing blanks. They can be guns that used to be used traditionally that are modified to be prop. Like, there's such a wide range. Now, initially, reports said that the gun contained live ammunition. They're now saying it contained blank rounds. Spokesperson for Rust said there was an accident today involving the misfire of a prop gun with blanks. Production has been halted for the time being. And this helps. This part of the story is really about us. It's wanting to understand how something so unthinkable, so chaotic can happen. It doesn't change how tragic it is, and that someone would die at all. Anytime someone dies like this, it's just terrible. Like, so many people are going to feel so guilty, so responsible for it, even if there was no way that they could know. And by the way, really fast on the misinformation, I saw, who knows what will end up being true, but I saw, like, you know, people take a screenshot of an article and like highlight a line. It was implying that Alec Baldwin was like joking that he was gonna shoot her and then shot at her. And then the only place I could find that article was one of these Live Eagle Patriot blank things or whatever. So that does not appear to be true, but that didn't stop the tweet that I saw from getting lots and lots of retweets online. It could end up being true, but I don't believe it is established at this point.
Right. And he's made his share of enemies on the eaglepatriot.org/TV side of the aisle. I mean, right now, what are the things that you can do? You can look around and I mean, I just can't imagine what it must be going through Alec Baldwin's head right now. He did release a statement recently saying, you know, all the right things. Like, my heart goes out to the family, to the, you know, this woman who is now dead, who's a mother and a, or a daughter, and you know, all the family members that are of her or the people who've loved her. But I mean, these are the kinds of things. It's very dangerous on set, and there's tons of, and it depends on the, you can have a huge production with thousands of people working on it, like extras and everyone at the same time. And something like this can fall through the cracks. And then on a small production, for sure, you can have things fall through the cracks. You have, you know, there's all kinds of people whose job it is to be working together to go against the instincts of, say, directors or cinematographers or actors who want to try stuff. And even when that happens, when people, you know, when the first AD is just like, we can't do that, when there's someone from the union saying, no, you cannot mishandle this prop that way, there's a representative on set who says, no, we can't do that. Even still, stuff like this happens. I mean, famous celebrities have died as a result of mishandled firearms on set. And people just don't know, but it's like, it's even crazier that like Alec Baldwin would know. So it seems like there's no way Alec Baldwin is pointing guns at people that he shouldn't be pointing guns at, like fake guns knowingly. Like, there's no way in hell that happens.
Well, as you alluded to, despite the fact that often there are very stringent safety guidelines, which there are in this area, you know, they get guidance saying treat all firearms as though they are loaded and things like that. That does exist. I mean, I'm listening to a behind the scenes podcast from the filming of The Office, and they talk about whenever like a candle would be lit, there would be the safety person shouting to everyone on the stage, there's a candle, there's like they.
Well, yeah,
there are still accidents like. So suppose like the AP says that from 2016, from 1990 to 2016, 43 people died on sets in the US. More than 150 had been left with life altering injuries, including on Broadway. People know about the Spider-Man one. Back in 1993, Brandon Lee, the 28-year-old son of Bruce Lee, died on set after being accidentally shot with a prop gun during the filming of The Crow. It was later determined that the gun used had earlier fired a round that caused a cartridge to become lodged in the barrel, and blank rounds then dislodged and released that cartridge. There was another actor, this might have been who you were referring to, in 1984, actor John Eric Hexum was killed on the set of the TV series Cover Up. He accidentally shot himself in the head with a gun loaded with blanks.
Yeah, because
just tragic.
And that's, I mean, there's a, but that's not Alec Baldwin, right? Like, Alec Baldwin has been in gangster movies and movies with guns. I personally, I don't get it. You know, you can hear people have these discussions where it's like, it'll be fine. We'll have a real firearm and we need that kickback when he pulls the trigger. So we'll use that. But like onset of, you know, going on the Sony lot, I couldn't move a chair because of a union regulation. Like, you're not supposed to be able to, for good reason, for reasons just like this, they set off like, here is what you do and here's what this person does. Like on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we were on the Culver City lot, and like if you turned around with a prop or turned it like the wrong way, the prop master would be like, I have to, we're really good friends now, but if that leaves here and I lose it, like I'm done. And if you mishandle this prop and you break it, my job's gone, everyone's gone. And the reason for that is so that, you know, you can still keep making movies and people have those regulations in place for really good reasons, so that mistakes like this don't happen. But sometimes people show up and are like, oh, they wouldn't have a loaded gun on set, come on, and you pick it up and you shoot it. But yeah. And you'll see people all over people online right now, like actors are doing videos saying like, here's when I was on set, what we had to do with the firearms. But, you know, and then there's one that's kind of going, I guess, that I saw today that was, you know, they put protective shields up in front of the camera because who knows what's going to fly out of that, like the gas, the compressive gas that goes for a radius of whatever, a number of feet. And they put like glass shields in front of people, even when the gun isn't pointed at them, just so that they can be safe. And that's how it is on every set that you go to. Safety is paramount. And there's tons of people around there trying to protect you. And you know, thousands of movies and TV shows and commercials are shot every day and are filmed every day. And you know, eventually something like this happens. It's tragic and sad, and I feel bad, obviously, for the victims, but and also for Alec Baldwin. Like, I can't imagine what he must be feeling right now.
Yeah, well, and the family of, you know, of the woman that died. Like,
it's what I said. The victims. Doing her job. Come on.
Thank you for acknowledging that, Brett. Yes. Yes, it's just, it's, you know, I know people in the chat are like, well, lots of people die. Yeah, no, I get that. But certain deaths seem more unlikely. And, you know, we are a species that fears death, that worries about dying. And there, we know that there are some things that we totally can't control. There are others that we think that we can. And when it's shown sometimes that we cannot, that does sort of break through. So absolute tragedy. Okay, with that, we are going to go to our first break. There's a lot more that we're going to be talking about, including some of the personalities on Fox taking a stance one way or the other on vaccine mandates at Fox. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, before we jump back into the news, I want to let you know about a few things that are coming up, including that there will be a power panel later today. It's Friday, we're obligated. But what's going to make it so exciting is I'm going to be joined in the first hour, not by Cenk. We booted him. We didn't have room. We're getting Francesca Fiorentini and Senator Nina Turner in the same hour. I don't know. Has that happened before? It's going to be very exciting. And J.R. Jackson is going to be joined by Farron Cousins and Wozni Lambre. Another awesome hour of news that's coming up later today. You know, all the places you would expect. There's going to be Galaxy Brain at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/TYT. Ben Carollo coming at you with Galaxy Brain. And Brett, there is also, there's Game Busters. What's going on in Game Busters?
Bustin' makes me feel good. That's the song. That's a lyric from the Ghostbusters song.
I watched that recently. Yeah. It made me smile when I heard that.
And then we've got, what are we doing? I don't know. I think we're playing Dead by Daylight.
Nice. That's
which fun. Is really scary. And it's going to be a lot.
When can they watch that?
Tonight at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, only at twitch.tv/TYT. Jordan Yule will be your dungeon master.
Nice. That's 5:30 to 6:30?
7. 5:30 to 7. Okay. We go 90 awesome. Minutes. Nice. We're like soccer game. I think
the best shows are 90 minutes, personally. Anyway, okay. With that, we'll have more we're going to tell you about later, but let's move on. To the news. Fox News mixed it up a few months back. They've been doing month after month after month of telling you you shouldn't get vaccinated, and they're still doing that. But a couple months ago, they started plucking from around the country these people who were not complying. Hashtag do not comply with the vaccine mandates. And they loved that stuff back when it was masks or people who wouldn't socially distance. But they especially loved it when people would refuse to get the vaccine to comply with the mandate. And if that meant that they lost their jobs, that just makes them a better patriot, that they won't bow down to that sort of tyranny. And so I want to show you, this is a tweet from Matt Gaetz that we've shown you multiple times. He just collects chyrons from Fox. And they're all just, it's authoritarianism. Here's someone who owns a cupcake shop and they're not going to comply with it and all that stuff. And they really like it. They think that it makes you a great patriot to not bow down to that. Well, of course, they have a mandate. You do not have to get vaccinated at Fox, but if you don't, you need to get COVID tested every single day. Tyrannical. Actually, it is more harsh than Joe Biden's actual vaccine mandate. That testing is only every week. They are 7 or 5 times more harsh at Fox. So people have been wondering for some time, well, then why aren't you being the great patriots that you've lifted up? Why are you being the sheep that you attack for complying with this? Well, some of them are now starting to respond to that. And here is Sean Hannity talking about two different groups, all of the other people, the peasants and himself.
Just wait till all these people in all these professions start leaving the workplace because of Joe's mandate and their unwillingness to work with employers. I'll tell you what my fear is, and it has nothing to do with me. I don't have a problem. I can retire tomorrow and I don't have to work another day in my life. I don't want to, you know, but that's not what I don't think my calling's to quit. For whatever reason, God gave me a big mouth. All right. And I think he expects me to use it.
I have a calling, and it's not to like not get paid anymore. It's great when you guys do it. Oh, it's the best, Brett. When their calling is to, for me, I mean, I totally could. It would be super easy. I'm like totally rich, but like, I don't think it's for me to quit.
Yeah. With all these things, you have to boil it down to like, what's their priority? Sean Hannity's priority is to have an angry audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how to do it. And he's a you first kind of guy. Like you first, like he submitted to a vaccine mandate. Why? He believes in science. He believes that the vaccine is going to reduce your potential mortality, you know, the mortality rate of a, you know, patient who gets COVID. He knows that. He knows it reduces your likelihood of getting COVID. He is aware of that and he lives his life accordingly. But when the cameras are on, what he wants to do is make you feel right to be an angry member of his audience. And even if whatever percentage of his audience dies that way, he prevents himself from dying an even more terrible death, which is a death of irrelevance and lack of audience. Yeah. When the cameras are off, he lights up his vape. Or like he uses his vape, he plugs in his vape and he smokes and he's like a completely different person. But in front of the cameras, his job is to be Superman of the right with his fancy dancy haircut and talk all day long. It's all BS.
It is. It is. And like, by the way, if you're going to point out that like, oh, I shouldn't quit, don't lead into that by saying, by the way, I'm independently wealthy, I'm going to be fine. Well, then it's even easier for you to quit. Some of these people who are actually quitting, like that's difficult. They don't have money. So they're like, by the way, I don't think it is patriotic, but it's definitely harder. It's definitely more of a sacrifice. And by the way, we're not saying, Sean Hannity, you can't use your big mouth anymore. You can't talk into a camera or a mic anymore. I'm not saying you can't do a podcast. You can't do a YouTube show. It's that you are working for Fox. Why are you bowing down to that tyranny? Because you're wealthy and you could still do a show, but you don't care. It's convenient for him to get people worked up, because if you'll quit your job for Sean Hannity, you'll watch him for the rest of your life. But also, you quitting your job, what effect does that have on you? Well, you potentially are thrown out of your house, you lose everything. For him, maybe if the numbers are high enough, it'll look bad for Biden. They are tiny little Lego blocks in the construct he's building to maybe hurt Biden a little bit. That's how little he cares about them. But there are other, super fast, because there's a lot we gotta get.
Just so rarely do we have like the perfect scenario to prove hypocrisy, and this is one of them. Like
100%.
Like all of it. And you're talking, and he always talks about how the founding fathers were perfect. The Continental Army. Washington mandated vaccines among his soldiers, his kids, your kids, everyone's kids, soldiers now when they go abroad have to take a regimen of vaccinations, period. End of story. And they all have submitted until these schmuckos decided that they were going to make this political. We got a vaccine. It's killing a ton of people. It's killed over 700,000 Americans. Take it.
Yeah,
and if 100%. They mandate it, you can quit. Like I'm fine with anyone who quits over a vaccine mandate that they don't want to comply with. That's America to me. You can make those decisions. But it's also America for me to point out like your ideas are stupid and they're bad and they're wrong. But I don't hate you. But I'm going to call out when you're wrong. And more importantly, when your dear leader is absolutely snowing you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I would say if your ideas are so wrong that it leads people to die, then yeah, I'm gonna hate you actually.
T
two things. One, TYT Sports is in the chat saying Rick would quit for Hilo, but not for me. Thanks. And also, let me just do a general thing. I've said this sort of before. Love every member of the audience, but we've got a million legitimate things to criticize all these anti-vaxxers for, including Sean Hannity. The big mouth stuff, tying that into some sort of homophobic joke, not interested in. Please keep that out of my chat. I would appreciate that. There's lots of good things. He's literally trying to get people killed. Let's focus on that rather than the other stuff. But anyway, he's not the only one. Fox and Friends was talking about this recently. Now, notably, Fox and Friends is one of the only places on the network that have sort of sometimes do see specifically implied that people should get vaccinated. Here's what they had to say about the hypocrisy.
The misinformation he said about Fox. He thought it was says, I think it's funny that Fox has a vaccine mandate. You have a testing option at Fox. So what he said is totally inaccurate.
We don't have a mandate, we have a protocol.
Right, COVID protocol. That's a little different. Someone should tell the president.
Mandate, that makes you sheep. Complying with a protocol, cool guy.
And if you violate that protocol, you get fired.
You get fired.
You can pack your knives and go.
Yeah.
Like,
I've just opted into this 100% mandatory protocol.
It's okay. Stupid. It is so transparent. And their people go along with it. Why? Because their priority is to feel right. Mm-hmm. Everyone watching Fox needs to feel smarter and right. That's it. And they like being angry. They call it a protocol, man. It's this, and guess what? That protocol is the thing that Biden introduced that other people are calling a mandate.
Yeah.
Do you realize that?
And again, theirs is five times harsher, just to be clear.
Literally.
Exactly five times harsher. Okay, so when are they gonna quit? Well, we're gonna give like 2% fake credit to the one person there that seems to be willing to quit. Kind of, but not really. And that is Dan Bongino. He has recently threatened to quit his Cumulus radio position because of the vaccine mandate. Now understand, they apparently do have an actual, you have to be vaccinated. That is a slight difference. But let's also point out that while he's at least sort of implying he'll walk the walk, he hasn't done it or anything, but he's implying it. He's not saying, well, and also Fox, which has a five times harsher mandate than Biden, I'm also gonna lose that. It's a little bit easy to lose your radio position and keep your cable news position. That isn't necessarily the power play that he probably assumes that it is. Bear in mind, his radio show is simulcast on Fox News. So if he loses Cumulus, he still literally has the same show and he hosts a Saturday night show on the network titled Unfiltered. And I have no idea how much he gets paid there. I'm assuming it's a lot. I know for sure it's too much, but he definitely doesn't want to lose that money. Radio show, he can get rid of that. He didn't really care, but he doesn't want to lose the big money. His patriotism, his performative patriotism only takes him so far. It ain't taking him out of Fox.
It's so dumb. And he's one of those guys that gets like the paid media placement that rockets him to the top of Facebook impressions. So he probably gets the revenue from that without having to like incur the essentially how much it costs to place that as a promoted video. But he and Ben Shapiro and all those guys are always the number 1, 2, 3, 4 videos on Facebook. And there is no way that any of that is remotely organic, just like Jambogino's jowls, which are steroid grown since 1998.
I think he has perfectly fine jowls. I don't know.
That dude,
I disagree
in my slightly. Expert opinion, and I'm as much of an expert on steroids as he is on vaccines, but that dude roids up hard.
I would be willing to bet some money. I have no idea. I do think some of them, I think, never would have made it without that inorganic stuff. I think the Bongino's like that, obviously. I mean, his NRA show literally shut down. Like, they could not sustain it. Ben Shapiro, too, who's gotten millions of dollars in advertising. But I do think now that people know who they are, I think some of the spread is organic because they know what to do. What to do is have no actual values, literally just mine your positions from the audience you want to build and get them really mad all the time.
And
I think
that's
once
leading
you do that,
behind.
You can get some people to want. What's that?
That's leading from behind. That's what they do.
Sure,
they lead from behind. And that's something they always criticize everybody else from. But yeah, And you'll see them. You'll see the entire, you know, group of like rabid sheep, not lions, like snap at them. Oh, you stepped. Oh, you told me that I should get vaccinated. Donald Trump, my fear leader. They booed him.
Yeah,
his own vaccine.
Now he doesn't say that so much anymore.
He bombed at the haha hole, and now he's changed his setup to not do those jokes again. Like, that's the performance.
By the way, I recently rewatched that Kramer video. It is so much worse than I remembered it being. It's really bad. Anyway, that character could definitely run as a Republican. Okay, with that, let's move really quickly to unrelated news. Let's jump into this. I don't want to get you like too excited about the possibility that the US government will actually do something, but supposedly Bernie Sanders and Joe Manchin have grown slightly closer, like maybe closer to an agreement. And how do they do that? Well, the power of swearing. Apparently they had to swear at each other. Apparently everybody's just swearing, and that's the thing that we're going to focus on. So apparently there's going to be this big week of negotiations, so they decided to meet up. Bernie Sanders and Joe Manchin, the head of two different parts of the Senate, the progressive part and the radical corporatist part that they call the moderates. And so he had said that he could, that universal pre-K was in, Manchin said, but no tuition-free community college, which Sanders responded with bless. I just love the idea of him shouting that in a meeting. Anyway, Sanders said that Manchin was telling the rest of the Democratic caucus to go F themselves and bend to one senator's agenda. Manchin disputed that, even though it's like, okay, it's not totally accurate. It's at least two senators' agenda, maybe three, but it's definitely what's happening. And he said that Biden hadn't won West Virginia, and his very presence in the Senate is remarkable. And that is true. Biden didn't win West Virginia, and this bill only has stakes for West Virginia, so that should be foremost in our minds. But apparently they argued back and forth, then they met privately, they posed for a photo and publicly reconciled. They've since met four times in 1 week, apparently now softening their rhetoric, no more S-bombs, B-bombs, G-bombs, anything like that, and speaking more hopefully of a deal. Apparently it's a breakthrough. That's what it says in all of these different places. I don't know what that means in practice. Did we get something that we didn't have a week ago? I don't know, but apparently they needed to get in a room, yell at each other, and then hug it out, I guess, Brett.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're communicating. They hadn't been communicating before. Manchin typically comes around in the long run. But not always. And we don't know how he's going to come down in this negotiations, but in these negotiations, but I don't know. I think when he talks about how he, as a West Virginian Democrat senator, it's just because like that's remarkable. No. Let's evaluate some things. Something called the personal vote. The governor of West Virginia used to be a Democrat and now is a Republican. Mm-hmm. If he was still a Democrat, he probably, you know, he can countervail that with some kind of personal vote name recognition. And then let's talk about how Joe Manchin typically keeps from alienating his base in West Virginia. It's by catering to a certain cultural situation that's going on there, but also like he can still, you know, come back to any government programs that help his state. You can do that without making them feel like, and it's his job to message that, but without making them feel like the government welfare state is coming for West Virginia and telling them they can't like blaze their own trail on a country road. Like,
yeah,
you just can handle it through messaging, Joe, which is something that you're you're not going to shy away from because you have been posting online responses to what Bernie Sanders is saying. Paul Begala is going out there saying there's nothing better for Joe Manchin than to have Bernie Sanders mad at him. Fine. Spin that into picking the policies that you want that will help West Virginians. And the part where I start to get more cynical of Joe Manchin, if that was even possible, is when the things he's fighting for are like subsidies for coal and protections for coal that will keep him rich while ships that have sailed don't double back to pick up the people of West Virginia. Yeah. And that's what the climate aspects of this negotiation coming from the left, people further left than him, are set at helping out with, helping the transition so that, you know, West Virginia can continue to be a place that powers America. You know, and Jennifer Granholm, energy secretary, is on CNN messaging toward that. Yes, I understand that he is trying to keep West Virginia as a power center for America. So let's try to get them to transition to be the home in America where labor is cheap anyway.
Yes, and in West Virginia, why I have said the infrastructure bill should include enough money to buy him a solar company so that he can then just continue to profit off of the energy if that's the cheaper
thing to do. Employ West Virginians.
Exactly. And by the way, he recently said in one of these meetings, yeah, I'll give him, how about we have this? How about we have zero? Like, yeah, okay, I want you to go and go to the hollers or whatever and tell West Virginia, I'm perfectly fine giving you $0. But he doesn't have to do that. And the pressure has been put on him to require that he do that. Super fast, because we don't have time. Politico, their like big morning thing where they like sum up a couple pieces of news, had this big thing about Biden swearing too. In meetings with aides, Biden's vulgarities include but are limited to F them, what the F are we doing, why the F isn't this happening, bull ass, damn it, or just simply F. According to several current and former aides, when pushing aides for better answers, he will sometimes say, don't bull ass a bull esser. When he cusses around women, it is always, and I mean always, followed by an immediate apology. That's kind of funny, actually. Is this designed to give us the idea that he's passionate and invested? Because it doesn't feel like that if he's not even swearing in public. It's not like he does a meeting where he's like, that effing Joe Manchin, I'm sick of his S. Okay, then the swearing would be noteworthy. But if I need to find out from Politico's newsletter, that is not evidence of much, I don't think. I don't know, do you feel differently, briefly?
I mean, Politico's trying to point out, oh my God, they're cursing. Ooh, behind the scenes, they care. Come out in front of the scenes and talk to us. Now, I get it. The big question I have is, does the office of the presidency hold the kind of weight that it does only seem to hold when you're watching the West Wing, where like you got your home court advantage and the president sits you down and the president asks you for something? And does that disappear with two factors? One, that the president of the United States is Joe Biden, who's been your colleague in the Senate for years before, you know, and the vice president, sure, but he's a longtime senator. Or is he like, let's make a deal the way we used to in the Senate? I think my big concern is that, and Biden is trying to please a lot of different people, and at the end we'll probably get a $2 trillion package that covers a few bases, but not the ones that a lot of us want. And then the Democrats are gonna be tasked with like messaging that they delivered for America. And when they can't message along the way to delivering for America, and it's kind of gotten away from them, and I don't know who the leader of the Democrats is right now, because I don't hear from them, I don't talk to them, I only hear the detractors who are foot dragging. Like, come on, step up and take charge and be dynamic the way America needs you to be. And maybe part of that is dropping an S-bomb every now and then.
I wouldn't mind it if it was in pursuit of something good. Okay, we gotta take our second break. We come back. We've been complaining for a long time about people in government owning stocks. Soon they won't be able to, but they is like this many people. But we'll have the details after this. Anyway, we got a lot to get to, so let's jump into this next story. If you're not a big fan of government corruption, well, have I got some good but extremely specific news for you. And that is that yesterday it was announced that the Federal Reserve is going to be changing one of their policies. And effectively, they're going to be instituting a wide-ranging ban on officials owning individual stocks and bonds, and limits other activities as well to try to stop them using their position to financially benefit themselves. So Fed officials can no longer have holdings in shares of particular companies, nor can they invest in individual bonds, hold agency securities or derivative contracts, The new rules replace existing regulations that, while somewhat restrictive, still allowed officials such as regional presidents to buy and sell stocks. Under the new rules, the officials will have to provide 45 days notice in advance of buying or selling any securities that are still allowed. And if they're late for that, I swear to God, Dave Leventhal is gonna be on your ass. So watch out. Anyway, they will also be required to hold the securities for at least a year, and they cannot buy or sell funds during, quote, heightened financial market stress. And so that includes top policymakers, such as those who sit on the Federal Open Market Committee, along with senior staff. Future investments will have to be confined to diversified assets such as mutual funds, things that track either the entirety of the stock market or particular sectors of the stock market, basically aggregations that cannot as explicitly allow you to influence your buying or selling based on what you know is about to happen and what you choose to do. And there's been a number of different scandals involving them and their trading disclosures and trading stocks on the eve of statements from the head of the Fed and things like that. So this seems to be trying to stop that, Brett.
Yeah, this is one of those things. Good work if you could get it. Like if you're a policymaker at the Fed and you have a certain kind of stock, it's gonna be really difficult for you to resist the urge to enact a policy that'll help you, especially when there's overheating and you're like, I kind of want to stop this thing from happening. And if I do that, it'll kind of help me out. Yeah, that should absolutely be the case. I think that there is some kind of value in a philosophical sense for having people who make policy be benefit from the holistic well-being of an economy that they oversee rather than a specific aspect of it. And so if you had some kind of index fund or some kind of generally diversified portfolio of everything that reflects the ups and downs of the GDP, manufacturing, employment on a domestic, you know, sense. But when you can pick winners and losers in a micro sense, by enacting macro policy, then especially when there's so many different kinds of products out there in the financial market that allow you to pick specific winners and losers and benefit by picking losers if you do it right and then create winners and losers, then that absolutely should be something that is wildly off limits. In the same way that when you go into a movie screening and you put your phone in a plastic bag and you can't get it till afterwards, like you need to take your financial portfolio, put it away when you go into this job so that you can't do something nefarious and ruin everything for everyone else who puts so much work into like making the economy work or their own personal job just because it would benefit you personally. And you can get it back when you leave, but in the meantime, you have to completely get rid of all your specific individual stock.
Yeah, and look, I think I would go even further. Maybe this is crazy, but I'm totally fine with effectively limiting virtually every avenue for people to benefit financially from their jobs, during their jobs, after their jobs, lifetime bans on lobbying.
In jobs like in general, you mean in policy making
jobs? I'm saying specifically lobbying positions, stuff like that. They should not be doing big speeches while they're in office. I'd probably have some period of time. They can't do big speeches afterward. I do not want people entering into public service to do private service for themselves, or people that they know that own corporations. And we maybe you can go too far in restricting that. We're not a light year from that. We've now extended this, but this is a good move, you know, because they have such direct control. Do they have less or more direct control than Congress people or senators? I don't know, I'm not an expert. But I would say that if you think that they could be influenced to do corrupt stuff to benefit themselves financially, I would very much like to apply that exact same philosophy to those who are voting based on these things, going to private meetings like Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue and investing accordingly. This makes a lot of sense, and it makes equal sense to be applied to our elected officials.
And this is something that I'm sure you can message well with like the populist movement in America. You should call it the America Fund, the America Index. You can get a bunch of people on the right to buy into that if you call it the America Fund, so that they are invested in America as we would define it. Now, the most hilarious part of that is there will be these weird jockeyings for people having access to be the selected, firm that is included in the America Fund. And that will 100%, I hate to break it to everyone, be determined by lobbyists who have access to get into
I don't think
that.
There has to be just one fund. I think most broad mutual funds would be many steps less corrupt. Not, it's not 100% better, but it's a lot better.
I'm with you on that. In that, I like your term, like light years away from it. Like, let's try it. There's definitely things that if you ask any American on the street, like, should Joe Manchin be in charge of climate policy while being a coal baron? Insane. I think a lot of people will see the inherent hypocrisy and corruption in that.
Yeah, and I think that I would ban private ownership and stuff like that too. I mean, that's way more corrupt than the stocks, I think, and way more than the campaign donations. But we have to move on this last story. We have very few minutes remaining, so let's jump into this. There's been this debate online: is Twitter biased? And if so, for who? You probably have heard many times the companies like Twitter and Facebook are so biased against the right wing. And don't show us those lists of the things that they produce the most viral, get angry quick content. That always being true does not prove that it's not biased against them. They can be shadow banned. Do you know that? Well, Twitter decided this year to look into it, and they did a study to see if certain types of political content are being algorithmically amplified. So is the algorithm itself, which chooses what to show you, benefiting certain types of speech? And so they looked at millions of tweets of elected officials in 7 countries. So this is the US, but it's also Canada, France, Germany, Japan, Spain, the UK as well, as well as hundreds of millions of tweets containing links to articles from news outlets. So stuff that is about politics. In all the countries except Germany, tweets about political content from elected officials, regardless of party or whether the party's in power, do see algorithmic amplification. And that was benefiting the political right. And it didn't mean that the party that was in power necessarily, like, it was biased in that way. That 6 out of 7 countries, again, all but Germany, tweets posted by accounts from the political right received more algorithmic amplification than the political left when studied as a group. And when it came to news outlets, the exact same thing occurred. Right-leaning news outlets received more algorithmic amplification than left-leaning news outlets. So both for individual politicians, are there things being seen, and links to political content, the bias is there. The bias is towards the right wing, and that will change nothing about the way they message about social media. They will still whine and complain constantly because it is there to their personal immediate benefit to do that. And in fact, this might be an effect of years of whiny lobbying from the right.
Yeah, I you know, a lot of obvious things coming out of this. But the one thing that I kind of want to focus on is that maybe it's because the right is good at testing and messaging, because they set typically the framing for most discussions in America, and they do it in a way that ends up triggering things that if you were designing any algorithm to give people more of what they want, you would, you know, design in favor of. So the Republicans are the ones who come out and say, like, death tax and instead of estate tax. They're the ones who come out and say that, like, this is all communist, the communist socialist radical people. And you have the conversation based on the rhetorical footing that they initially set down. And so that gets people that are supportive of them most riled up. And since there is not as prevalent and unified a message from the left that galvanizes a discussion in that way, the left ends up focusing on the annoying right-wing people who are monsters on purpose. And so you get more interaction on that side. So whether it is, so I think that's probably the genesis of it. And it's incidental over time that because of whoever initially defines the conversation typically benefits from it. I think if I'm, you know, speculating here, but I bet that has a giant impact on it. That's one thing. And the other is there's way more paid media on the right than there is on the left. You can't convince me otherwise. Definitely. Even like on Reddit, when I see like the ridiculous toilet paper USA posts, the screen caps they use of like Michael Knowles are all promoted. They buy their views, and that does it. And now if you're on the staff at Facebook and people are like, maybe we should stop making it as right leaning, and you're like, what, they do paid advertising, and also people on the left are talking about it and shooting it down, and that's more speech.
Sure.
They're not gonna change it. And in my conversations over time with people who work at those places, they're like, I have to explain the algorithm to you. We can't just like turn one thing on and one thing off about it. We have to, you know, throw, if you are what you eat, we need to throw more leftist stuff into the algorithm and it eats it and becomes a slightly more leftist, but we don't know what kind of ungodly amalgamation it's become over the years.
Yes, although we try to play to very different emotions and they might not be less inherently viral. Anyway, we have only seconds left. Thank you everybody for being here for the first hour. There is more coming. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube, we will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.